Okay. This is one for Dr. Simons and for Bev Harris. Regarding the Echelon real-time hacking situation, is there any way to track hacks in real time on a system nationally?
Yeah, well, I mean, hack. Can I answer a different question? Like, you know, pretend I'm a politician. I'll just answer a different question. let's talk about hacking for internet voting, for example. One of my favorite scenarios, I mean, I have a whole bunch of favorite scenarios, is that, like, there's an email that goes around, say, for the Michigan primaries that says, "Dear primary voter, dear Democrat, voting is an important thing to do. It's our right. We encourage you to vote. Now, as you know, there are a lot of viruses on the system. You may have heard about the MyDoom virus. We're very concerned about this. So please go to this website and download this virus protection software." Signed, the head of the Michigan Democratic Party. It's got the logo from the Michigan Democratic Party on the top. So people go to the website and they download the virus software, the antivirus software, and then, whoops, right. That wasn't a legitimate note from the Michigan Democratic Party. In fact, what they just did was they just downloaded the virus software, which will take over their machines, which could control it, just as you're saying. Or you could do something like that with the serve election, dear serve election voter, please download the software, or please go to this website to vote. That's another one you can do. You know, we're worried about a lot of congestion, so please go and vote on this website. And then it looks just like a legitimate website, and you go and you vote, and it turns out, of course, it's not a legitimate website, and maybe on that website it says, well, gee, I mean, here's something which would be hard to detect. You've got software there which flips a coin. So you want one of the presidential candidates to win, but you don't want to make it completely obvious as to what you're doing. So you randomly change a few votes. You flip a coin, and there's no way to reconstruct what happens, even if you discover that somebody went to the wrong website, because you don't know if their vote was changed or not, right? Because you can't repeat it, because it's random. Those are the kinds of tricks you can do. And you can basically, the bottom line is, whenever a machine has been taken over by a virus, or when you go to a compromised website, you lose all control. And that's a point that I was trying to make to the Michigan Democratic Party. You know, I don't care how good your security is for the server that people are going to vote on, there is nothing you can do about the PCs that people are voting from. They are fundamentally insecure. The internet is fundamentally insecure. As soon as a PC is compromised, all bets are off. You can do anything.
And one more thing. You don't have to necessarily hack in with a modem or the internet. Another thing to do would be to simply put in what's called an Easter egg, which is a piece of code that just lies there dormant unless it's triggered. It can be triggered by something as simple as casting a vote in a certain configuration. You see. So that would not involve any kind of hacking in. That would just be, you know, okay, I'm going to go in and I'm going to cast my little configuration of votes, and all of a sudden the little DLL file does its thing, and things start to change. So the thing is, we're creative. We can always come up with a way around whatever they come up with, and so, you know, it's a complex system, and so I don't think it's something that you can 100% protect against.
One of the things that we felt with the study we did on Serve is that you know, you say, well, there's this vulnerability, maybe you could protect against it, like the one about the website. If you get too many messages from the same website, maybe you can check for that, although AOL doesn't make that possible because everything has this from the same IP address, or if you know, people voting from the same company might all have the same IP address, so that doesn't necessarily work. But you know, you try to think, well, take this attack and how would you defend against it? But it's sort of like what you were saying before, the whack-a-mole. Every time you think of maybe a way to protect against one attack, although often there were no protections, you could think of another attack.
Okay, we've got about 15 more minutes, so what I'm going to do is pull the broader questions first, and then we've got some fairly detailed computer science questions, and I'm going to hit those at the end. We're going to try to fit everything in. Okay, this is a question for Andy Stevenson, and Andy, if you don't have the answer to this one, I do. Will UN election supervisors be involved in U.S. elections, and can we get their help with this?
I'm sorry?
Will United Nations election supervisors be involved in U.S. elections, and can we get their help with this?
Oh, boy. You mean in the Banana Republic, USA? Yeah, I think at this point in time, we need to have some outside observers. In fact, I'm lobbying Jimmy Carter right now to maybe be an elections observer, because I think we've got some real problems right now. I mean, for example, in New Hampshire, their optical scan system is using firmware 1.92T. Well, it was certified by the state of New Hampshire, but it's never been certified federally. So, you know, I don't know that John Kerry won for sure in New Hampshire. We don't really know, because when you take out the ESNS and the Diebold counted votes, the spread between Dean and Kerry is only 1.5%. But when you add back in ESNS and Diebold, it's like 53 or 54% difference between the two men. So, I mean, yeah, we maybe need to have some UNM observers come in and watch our election system.
But, of course, watching with the DRE doesn't do any good, because you don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on inside.
Yeah. What's your answer? I'm curious.
The answer is yes, they will be, but not in the way that you think. The bulk of United Nations election inspectors are actually drawn from the ranks of election administrators in the United States. So they're already involved in the U.S. elections.
Oh, great.
And that may be the problem. Okay, the next one is a two-parter, and it's terrific. I've been saving this one for a while because I think a lot of people are going to be interested in this. It's for all three of you, and I'm going to do them in reverse order. The first one is rumors this writer heard, that Gore received negative votes in certain Florida counties in the 2000 election. Would that be Volusia County?
Oh, yes. Oh, do I get that one? Yes, I found that one in the memo. Well, it was in the news that negative 16,022 votes showed up for Gore in Volusia County, and they said it was a bad memory card. Now, a memory card is like a ballot box. It's like saying it's a bad ballot box. It's kind of an odd explanation, because that's like a bad disk, and it's not like a bad disk when you put it in. It's going to make all the races exactly right except for one, and then it's just going to change the numbers. You know, it's going to be more likely to work. And it's, you know, error. But when I got the Diebold memos, I found a series of memos, and it started out with a poor employee of Volusia County who said, "The auditors are coming. Can someone help explain the negative 16,000 votes so I don't have to stand here looking dumb?" And the explanation was that they replaced the votes with an unauthorized replacement. Now, some of us might call that election tampering. They had memory card zero, which they put in. It had the right results. An hour later, they put in memory card number 3. All the results were right except for the presidential race, in which took away 16,000 votes for Gore. That was eventually caught. It wasn't in the final totals of Florida, but it wasn't no harm, no foul, because it was exactly the amount, what a coinky-dinky, that was needed to call the election for Bush. And it was and according to the CBS internal memo, which I now have published in the source documents on my website, it was specifically because of those 16,000 votes that the networks called for Bush. It was specifically because of the 16,000 votes that Gore prematurely conceded to Bush. Gore was on his way to concede to the nation. He was two blocks away when they found out the vote total was bogus. Now, had he conceded to the nation, that would have been horrendous. It was bad enough that every time from now on you see a sign that says "sore loser man," remember that it was only called for Bush because of a bogus vote total that was a replacement set of votes, and according to the senior vice president of Diebold, was probably unauthorized, quote, spelled with an S because he's Canadian, unauthorized.
Okay, and the next portion of this is, again, for all three of you, any of you who want to hop in. Evidence, let's rephrase that, indications of Diebold machine problems favoring John Kerry in the current primary. And by that, I'm assuming you mean in the primaries that have been conducted in the 7 states in which they've been conducted.
Boy. Yeah, that's one I've been watching. In fact, I quite innocently, about 4 or 5 days ago, there was a thread. I don't know if any of you are here familiar with Democratic Underground, but there was a thread the other day regarding this very issue. And, you know, I quite innocently said, well, you know, maybe the software wasn't certified. Well, I talked with New Hampshire's Assistant Secretary of State, and lo and behold, it wasn't certified. So I really have questions about New Hampshire, and I'm not entirely sure about New Mexico, because apparently there were some problems. And another poster child for what's wrong with voting in the United States is Bernalillo County, which is, there was a lot of problems. Yeah, Albuquerque. But so, yeah, I have no answer on that, but I'm not quite sure that John Kerry won.
Okay, this is a question for Dr. Simons. Why does the code in these voting systems have to be so complicated?
That's not a fair question. I'm not sure. Quite frankly, I haven't sat down to try to write a voting system. As I said, I understand a bit about the internet voting system because when you're trying to deal with maybe that's the answer. It's because our election systems are so complicated. They vary from precinct, you know, from state to state, from county to county. And so you've got this hodgepodge of voting laws, of voting requirements, of what the ballot looks like, ballots look like. In California, you know, we're famous for these horrendous ballots with huge propositions and you know, we vote for judges. Other places, they don't vote for judges. I mean, it's kind of a mess. And I think that's one of the reasons that I suppose if you had the election software tailored for each area, it might be a lot less complicated. But I don't know about the legal issues for doing that. I mean, that's actually an argument for not having the computers involved now, isn't it? I mean, you know, you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. The second part of this question is 2239, that's the bill in Congress right now, has been on deck since May of 2003. Why is it taking so long? And if you'd talk about what 2239 is as well.
Call your congressman. That's what I'll say. And
tell him what it is.
I'm sorry?
Please tell him what it is.
Oh, House Bill 2239 is the federal bill that's going to require a voter-verified paper ballot from each and every machine. And it's really important. Congressman Jim McDermott here in Seattle is on the case. So give him your support, and please call the senators and let them know what you desire as well, because that's, if they don't hear from you, they don't know.
I mean, if I could just say a little bit about that, I think what happened with H.R. 2239 when it was first introduced by Rush Holt, voting was not as much of an issue as it has become. I think people are a lot more aware around the country now of some of the problems of these touchscreen machines, and the number of Congress people who have been signing on to the bill has been increasing. But I think by and large, the Republicans have sort of stayed out of it because the Democrats have been at each other's throats. So when you get organizations like, as I say, the ACLU and the League of Women Voters, the LCCR, the Civil Rights Group, expressing concerns about voter-verified paper ballot, although I think the LCCR is backing down, these tend to be more Democratic types of organizations, and so the Republicans have been sort of standing back. Now, there are Republicans who have signed on to Rush Holt's bill. There have been several, and we're obviously eager to get more. And my greatest fear is that this should become a partisan issue. It's very important this be bipartisan, very important.
This is a good point to mention the bipartisan. We mentioned caucuses tomorrow. That's just the Democratic caucus. The Republican caucuses are in March, and I don't know if the Libertarians are caucusing, but they are a major political party in this state. And it's important to remember that voting integrity issues affect all of the parties equally. Everybody should be playing on a playing field that's flat, level, and fair.
Something from a strategic standpoint, I really think it's important to talk to family members, perhaps older people that are veterans. They tend to be Republicans. If you can get those people aware of the issues, and if they're active in those issues, and get them to contact their, you know, Republican constituents and propagate information that way, I think that's a really effective means.
Actually, just picking up. Could I pick up that really? In fact, Republicans historically have been the ones who've been pushing for honest elections. They're the ones who want to make sure people have to register, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's something which is very important to them. So I think, actually, the whole issue plays very well into the whole Republican philosophy. So I would like to see more Republicans involved with this.
Okay, back to the questions. The next one is for Dr. Simons and Bev Harris. Can you explain the controversy? I like the way this is phrased. Can you explain the controversy surrounding last year's vote in Georgia? It's tough to explain.
Well, that's you.
Well, Georgia certified an illegal election. That's the explanation. They certified an election. They have no idea what was on the machines, and now it's been wiped off, and they'll never have any idea. Isn't that great? That's why we need to have a paper ballot. There would be no fiasco if we had that, and we could go back to that.
Okay. This is one for Dr. Simons. The lesson from Florida 2000 is not defective paper ballots, but that that data mining was used to disenfranchise 70,000 African-American voters. The data mining was outsourced to a private company. The logical extension in 2004 is to commit election fraud by monkeying with the automated voting system directly via the same outsourcing to private companies. The fact that the system is automated makes it easier to commit the fraud. So the question is, not better voting machines, but to stop the privatization of voting, isn't it?
Well, basically what happened in Florida with the removal from the voting rolls of large numbers of African Americans by a private company was, I think, a major scandal, and I'm just really shocked nobody ever went to jail for it. I'm not speaking as a computer scientist now because this has nothing to do with what I do professionally, but apparently the way it was done was they took lists of felons from Texas and they matched people in Florida who had similar names. African Americans tend to have similar names, and so this was a way of disenfranchising large numbers of African Americans in Florida. I mean, there were other things that were done too. I'm sure you've all heard about the road, the police blockades before the voting places and so on. So I think what happened, I have an African-American friend, a good friend from high school, and I was talking to her about the voting issues, and I said, you know, this can take away democracy from this country the way things are going. And she looked at me and she said, Barbara, we've never had democracy. And from her perspective, that's true.
Well, the other thing is, with the African-American voters, in Florida, it's legal to mark what the race is on the voting card. So they were able to easily identify who they were. One of the things that Andy and I did today was put in a public records request for the source code for the voter registration system that was programmed by the embezzler. Because we'd like to see exactly what an embezzler programs into a voter registration system. It seems to me there's a lot of potential for fraud there. Another thing in terms of the whole voting integrity issue, and my husband's been doing some work behind the scenes on this. This week he's lined up support among a black businessman's group, one of the black churches in town, and a civil rights group among African Americans. And when I go down to California next week, I'm going to be heading into Oakland and building some liaisons. It's a crushing situation because you're talking about people who have fought for the right to vote for 140 years, and a lot of them feel they've won. And to come back now and say, oh, they're doing it again, is really hard to take. So one of the things, the obstacles that we're dealing with, and thank goodness, you know, that I do have a diverse household, or I wouldn't have understood why there seems to be resistance among the African-American community to this issue. But he said, you know, it's just crushing. It's just overwhelming at some point. And so we're leading with that issue now when we're dealing with the African-American population, because the facts are, once again, it's the population that gets victimized first.
If I could just make one quick comment. I had the opportunity to speak on a voting panel before at a session sponsored by the Congressional Black Caucus. And I have to say, some of the members of that caucus are really angry, really angry. And they want voter-verified paper ballots. So there's a bit of a disconnect there, too, between some of the civil rights groups.
It's getting there, yeah. It's something that we absolutely have to hit head on. And that's that's one of the things I'm going to be doing in California is working on it.
Okay. The connection between Hagel, that's Senator Chuck Hagel, and ES&S has been established, but more has to be said. Howard Amundson owns majority stake in ES&S, who belongs to the Council for National Policy, a hard right-wing organization, and also finances the Chalcedon, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Institute, which promotes Christian reconstruction in all areas of life, which mandates Christ's dominion over the entire world. Please speak to this broader issue of control and this push for electronic voting.
Oh, actually, I need to deal with that because it's a little bit... Howard Amundson was not the direct investor. It was two of his cousins. So, and his two cousins... Howard Amundson is a right-wing nut. I mean, he is. He's out there. He has almost been one of the key people who has almost rewritten politics in California. But he was not a direct owner of the SNS. The direct owners are, actually gave up their shares in 87. I think it's a problem in that, you know, we don't know who the people exactly are. Still with the SNS, we don't know exactly who owns it because there's a holding company that owns a large chunk of it and they won't identify who's in it. So he could be an owner. Bugs Bunny could be an owner. We don't know.
Okay, and we're going to have to ask for real short questions on these last ones, but I want everybody to get theirs in. What is the follow-up on Chuck Hagel's conflict of interest Senate Ethics Committee investigation?
Senate Ethics Committee, Chief Counsel for the Senate Ethics Committee resigned, most likely over this. They replaced him with someone who has a much... kinder, gentler approach to it. Just, you know, sweep it under the rug. We're not going to worry about it. So right now, nothing's being done, and I think the most important thing we can do is out it in public.
And this is a question for Dr. Simons. What is the ACM, that's the Association of Computing Machinery that you were formerly the president of, doing about electronic voting?
Whoever asked that question, thank you.
In 10 words or less.
just kidding. So, as was said, I'm co-chair of USACM, which is the U.S. Public Policy Committee of ACM. We've actually been working in a lot of different areas. Before I was working in this, I was working on copyright, fighting the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. We have a position on our website. If you go to the USACM website, ACM is www.acm.org, to get to the public policy, say /USACM/, and then you'll see we do have a page on voting. So we have a statement where we advocate voter-verified paper ballots. Now, in terms of what we're actually doing, I have to say, I'm doing this pretty much as an individual, but USACM is backing it, and obviously to the extent that we can get ACM members more actively involved, that would be really good. So if there are ACM members who want to get involved, maybe we can do some more things.
And this is a really interesting question. Even with open source voting software, how could the legitimacy of an entire system be guaranteed? Binary executables are opaque. Recall Ken Thompson's famous paper, Reflections on Trusting Trust, where a C compiler was hacked to allow supervisor logins without being visible in source code.
Yeah, I think I made some mention of that when I said that even if the source code were open and completely correct, that wouldn't mean that it still couldn't be changed because of a compiler thing. And I was thinking, of course, of Ken Thompson's paper. So, yes, that's a problem. The point is that even having the source, for those of you who don't know who Ken Thompson is and what we're talking about, the idea is that source code is what's written by people that they can read and understand more or less. What Deb was talking about, but the computer doesn't understand that, so you have to put it through another program called a compiler. The compiler translates the source code into what's typically called object code, which typically is zeros and ones. That because you're having a program doing something to another program, if the compiler itself is corrupt, it can corrupt the whole translation process and produce. Right, the compiler can also be open source, of course, but I mean, you still could have problems. I mean, you can have, as I said before, you can have open source and not find problems. Yeah, but we first of all, we can't.
Okay.
I agree, it should all be public. It should all be public. There shouldn't be any software that's using these things that are not public. I completely agree. But that won't solve the problem. If it
really
won't solve
quickly,
the problem, we could write bug-free software.
Guys, we're running over.
Yeah, I know. Really, really quickly. Concept of an audit, folks, has nothing to do with computers. It's a checkpoint system. The vote travels from here to here. It travels from the voter to the to getting counted. You put checkpoints, run reports at each stage. The reports should match from stage to stage to stage. That reduces the number of attack points. If it doesn't match, you pull the paper ballots. If there's a discrepancy, you expand the size of the audit. So it's really a procedural situation, not necessarily a computer solution.
Okay, thank you everyone for coming this evening. This is amazing to have speakers of this caliber.